February 27, 2003. Dear Uncle Richie, when I was home on leave, I reread the letters you sent from Vietnam to my father. In one of them, you said you were always a little nervous once you arrived in country. We're not in Iraq yet, but that's the way I feel, kind of jumpy. At one of our orientations, and we have at least 2 a week, an officer said that guys who fought in Nam wouldn't even recognize today's army. We're supposed to be so cool and well-trained and everything. I hope so. I was thinking that maybe your eyes wouldn't recognize today's army, but I'll bet your stomach would. Let me tell you where we are right now, but it's less than 100 miles from the Iraq border. What our army should do is to take photographs of all the military stuff we have over here and then send copies to the Iraqis. That would end things right then and there. I really think the Iraqis will hack down at the last minute and hand over their weapons, and we'll just have to put in a handful of military police to take care of business while the political people do their thing. I don't expect anybody to be shooting at us. You were right, though, when you said I would have doubts about my decision to join the army. You joined a war that had already started. I thought this would be different. Dad was still mad at me when I left, and it was no use telling him how I felt. You know, he had all those plans for me to go to college and whatnot. I tried to explain to him that I didn't think he was wrong about college or even about me studying finance. You know your brother, so you know what he said. If I'm not wrong, then why are you joining the army? Uncle Richie, I felt like crap after 9/11 and I wanted to do something, to stand up for my country. I think if Dad had been my age, he would have done the same thing. He was thinking about me and about my future, which is cool, but I still need to be my own man, just the way you were at my age. Anyway, say hello to everybody for me. And if you happen to speak to Dad, please put in a good word for me. All my life I never went against him until now, and I really feel bad that he's upset about me joining. Uncle Richie, one, remember listening to you and one of your buddies talking about Vietnam in your living room. You were both kind of quiet as you spoke, as if you were talking about some secret thing. That was interesting to me. I hope that one day I'll be talking and laughing the same way about what Jonesy, a guy in my unit from Georgia, calls our adventure. Well, that's all for now. Your favorite nephew, Robin. Gentlemen, ladies, welcome to Doha by the Sea. I'm Major Spring Sessions, and I'm overjoyed to welcome you to sunny Kuwait. If we actually have to enter Iraq, you will be playing a crucial role in achieving our objectives by interacting with the civilian population. There are many different areas of expertise among you, but together you make up a very strong team, and that's a concept that will be stressed over and over again, and you have all expressed an interest in the Civil Affairs Unit. I'm sure we'll all get along and make the Army proud of us. Major Sessions was cute, black, and had a smile that lit up the headquarters tent. She looked sharp in her desert camis. Jonesy nudged me with his elbow, and I had an idea what he was thinking. Our entire detachment is made up of about 42 people, and there will be some switching around as we go along. We might increase some teams and decrease others. That's an important concept, because what we're going to be doing, as an advanced civil affairs unit, is to assess future needs. Right now we have one medical team, one construction team, an intelligence team, security personnel, and a flex team that will work directly with the native population. Some of the security people will also be assigned to work with the locals, so you see how fluid the civil affairs unit will be. This is an important mission and you're important to it. Don't forget that. Captain Coles will brief you on your assignments, your mission, and your relationship to the infantry while you're over here. Thank you. Major Sessions smiled again, pivoted on her right heel, and moved smartly from the small stage. I had been introduced to Captain Coles when I first arrived at Camp Doha, and he seemed all right. Not too gung-ho, but not sloppy either. Tall and thin with blue-gray eyes, Coles always looked sincere, as if he really wanted to know about you and was interested in what you were seeing. He waited until Major Sessions left before he went to his clipboard. I have everybody listed here but the 3 new security teams. When I call out your name, give me some sign that you're here, that you're alive, and tell me your hometown, he said. You're not trying out for American Idol, so be as brief as you can be. I just need all of you to start connecting names and faces and get to know each other. Evans. Corporal Eddie Evans, Stormville, New York.
Sir!
Jones. Corporal Charlie Jones, Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Sir!
Harris. Sergeant Robert Harris, Tampa, Florida.
Sir!
Kennedy. Corporal Marla Kennedy, Dix Hills, New York.
Sir!
Perry. Private Robin Perry, Harlem, New York.
Sir!
Captain Cold looked up at me. What kind of name is Robin? Your mama didn't know if you were a boy or girl? I think she knew, sir. Well, which is it? Boy or girl?
Man, sir.
Okay, I can deal with that, Cole said. Darcy. Specialist Jean Darcy, Oak Park, Illinois.
Sir.
Rios. Corporal Victor Rios, Albuquerque, New Mexico. Nice town, Captain Cole said. Denforth. PFC Shelley Denforth, Richmond, Virginia. Pendleton. Corporal Phil Pendleton, Leetown, West Virginia. As Captain Coles read off the list of names, I looked around to see how many of the guys and the four women I remembered from the flight over. We had all arrived about the same time from the States, which was good. No two-month-old timers. I was glad to see everybody was wearing name dates. Okay, listen up. Captain Coles put his clipboard down and looked us over. For the time being, we're attached to the 3rd Infantry. If we actually get into a combat phase, the 3rd Infantry and the 4th Marines will spearhead the attack. The 3rd isn't particularly happy taking care of us, but they won't get into our hair unless we screw up and get in their way, which we won't. For the most part, we'll be trailing the 3rd's main combat force by at least a few days. We're going to have a lot of freedom, at least at first, as the planners and shakers back at the Pentagon, or wherever they do their planning and shaking, decide exactly what they want from us. In the unlikely event that Mr. Saddam Hussein doesn't step down and there actually is a shooting war, we will not be first-line troops. Basically, I think there will be a war because Mr. Hussein, in my opinion, is not wrapped too tight. We, the civil affairs team, we'll be on board to see what the Iraqi non-combatants need so that we can begin the rebuilding process as soon as possible. In case you're too stupid to follow what I'm saying, I will run it down for you very slowly and very carefully. If, when I am finished, you still don't understand, I will probably shoot you. Operation Iraqi Freedom has 4 phases. The first was the understanding and assessment of the area. This started way back during the first Gulf War that ended in February 1991. Since that time, the intelligence experts have been studying the area to understand the local dynamics and local problems. That phase is completed. We know what we are facing, what we are doing, and why we are here. At least that's the theory. The second phase is the preparation of the battlefield, which more or less means bombing the heck out of the enemy, taking out his communications, and disrupting his lines of supply. That'll start when the order is given, but that's not our job. The third phase, if necessary, will be the forceful removal of the present regime in Iraq and neutralizing their weapons, especially their weapons of mass destruction. These weapons could include various forms of gas and biological weapons, maybe even nuclear devices. The fourth and final phase will be the building of a successful democracy in Iraq. That's where civil affairs comes in. It's our job to assess and start that rebuilding process. I'll be point man for our operation and I will answer to Major Sessions. Major Sessions has a nice voice, pretty eyes, and a very nasty disposition. She would not mind shoving her hand up my rear end and tearing out my entrails if I don't keep you clowns on mission. Major Sessions answers to Colonel Armin Rose. Colonel Rose would also not mind tearing any or all of us a new one. He's served on the ground in Grenada in 1983 and in the first Gulf War, and he's kind of suspect about what we're supposed to be doing, so he'll be watching us carefully. He's going to want to know what kind of a job we can do. In other words, will we be able to make our battlefield successes meaningful? It's as simple as that. My personal mission in life is to grow old and grumpy and watch my kids flunk out of school. I need to get back home to get that done, and I would appreciate your help. We left the tent and drifted out into the bright Kuwaiti sun. The intense direct light was always a bit of a shock, and I saw guys going for their water bottles. I wasn't sure whether I should drink as much water as possible or try to train myself to drink less. Since Kuwait was right next to Iraq, I thought things would be tense here, but they're not. Our living quarters are in the warehouse area. The mess hall is really good and it even has a coffee shop. There are also fast food places, a theater, and a library that was built after the first Gulf War. After 2 weeks in country, I was still trying to get used to the heat and even complaining like everybody else, but down deep this is a little exciting too. I'm also wondering if there really is going to be a war. There is a huge amount of guys and heavy equipment already here and more being brought in every day. Hey, Bertie. I turned around and a tall blonde caught up with me. I'm 6'2 and we were almost eye to eye when she reached me. I glanced at her nameplate. Kennedy. Say, Bertie, weren't you at Fort Dix? She asked. Yeah, and the name is Robin, not Bertie, I said. Whatever, she said. I like Bertie better. Kennedy, I knocked out the last person who got my name wrong, I said. Really? I'm impressed, she said. A grin spread across her face. What kind of weapon was she carrying? Kennedy flipped the sling of her M16 over her shoulder and sauntered off toward the women's quarters. I had come down with measles at Fort Dix, New Jersey, with only 2 weeks left to go in my infantry training cycle. After a week in isolation at the hospital, I spent 3 weeks hanging around the day room watching television and shooting pool while it was being decided if I would have to repeat the whole cycle again. I ended up with another training group and then received orders to report to the Civil Affairs Detachment at Camp Doha in Kuwait. I went to dinner in the main mess. The tables actually had flowers and napkins on them and we ate off regular plates instead of the trays we had used at Fort Dix. I grabbed some meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and string beans, and found a table. One of the guys who had been at the meeting with Major Sessions came over and asked if he could join me. Sure, I said. The guy was about 5'7 with smooth brown skin and a round face. Solidly built, he looked like he could take care of himself. But when I saw his camouflage do-rag and dark shades, I knew he was a little different. So what you about, man? He asked. Same thing everybody else is, I answered, getting ready to go to war. What are you about? I'm about the blues, he answered. You know, the blues is what's real. Everything else is just messing around waiting until you get back to the blues. So what are you doing in Kuwait? I asked. I glanced down at his nameplate. It read Jones. Yeah, I'm Jones, he said. But everybody back home calls me Jonesy. What I'm doing here is getting some experience, getting to see some stuff, and saving my money so I can open up a blues club. When I get that club going, I'm going to play blues guitar 6 nights a week. Then on Sundays I'll jam with God because me and him is like this. Jones held up 2 crossed fingers. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Look, you and me got to stick together, he said. That way I can watch your back and you can watch mine. Okay. You play guitar? No. You sing? No. Jones looked away and I got the feeling he had already lost interest in watching my back. He talked some more about the club he was going to open. He didn't sound as if he had much of an education, but he seemed sincere about wanting to play his guitar. He said he practiced it at least 2 hours a day. Yo, Jones, that's good, I said. Jonesy, you got to call me Jonesy, he said. That way I know you're looking out. I liked Jonesy even though I wasn't sure what he was talking about sometimes. Like when he asked me if I was a hero. No, I answered. You tall, how tall are you? 6'2". A lot of tall dudes are hero types, Jonesy said. You go crazy trying to watch their backs. You know what I mean? Yeah, but I'm not the hero type, I said. There were special detachments created for medical, construction, and intelligence. The medical detachment people were a little older and were led by Captain Miller, a no-nonsense captain who acted like she knew what she was doing. The construction guys looked like the most fun and I figured that most of them had worked in either building or engineering in civilian life. The intelligence detachment looked okay but spent most of their time reading through reports from Central Command, CENTCOM, or listening to radio intercepts. Some of them had been through language school for Arabic. Captain Cole said that the rest of us, a dozen or so soldiers, would be working within the villages as part of the Flex team. That means we'll be doing anything that helps, he said. And we'll get blamed for everything that goes wrong. Sergeant Harris, a black soldier who had switched to civil affairs from quartermaster, along with Captain Coles, sorted the dozen of us into three Humvee squads, giving us a choice of who we wanted to ride with. Jonesy said he wanted to ride with me, and Cole said he would too. That still left a space in our vehicle and Kennedy was assigned to it. I didn't know if I liked her, but I didn't care all that much either. The squads and assignments will change according to the situation, Captain Cole said. You're assigned to a vehicle mostly so we can hold you responsible for keeping it in good order. First squad was Jones driving, Kennedy on the squad gun, me, and Captain Coles. Second squad was Sergeant Harris driving, Darcy, another girl, on the squad gun, and Evans. Third squad consisted of Love driving, Danforth on the gun, Pendleton, and a really quiet guy named Corbin who had worked in a rehabilitation center in civilian life. Ahmed Sabat was our field interpreter. He was American, but his parents were from the Middle East. We were all up for whatever happened, and everyone had an opinion about what that might be. You know, the Iraqis are talking about how they let the UN inspectors in and how their people are suffering from the sanctions, Evans said. If they were getting ready to fight, they wouldn't be doing so much talking. This is March. I'm betting by the 4th of July I'll be home fishing. There's no use watching the news to see what's going on. Sergeant Harris had his feet up on his foot locker. Saddam is getting ready for us and we're getting ready for him. That's all there is to the thing, man. Saddam is clever. Captain Coles's voice was soft, measured. He has to remember the Gulf War and he's savvy enough to understand that he can't stand up to the United States. No Iraqi general is going to give him a different take on things. If he lets it get to the point where we start going in, he's going to be taken out. Okay, I hear what you're saying, Harris answered. But you tell me this, sir. The president is telling him to step down and get out of Dodge. Where's Saddam going to go? Everybody over here hates his butt. He had a war with Iran, so he can't go there. The Egyptians don't like him. Everybody in Kuwait hates him for invading them. Where's he going to go? If he ain't got no place to go, he's got to stay in light. He going to stay and get smoked. A guy named Lopez said. He was olive-skinned with dark short cropped hair. The dude looked dangerous. I had asked him what the initials tattooed on his hand, ALKN, meant and he just looked at me and laughed. You know where Saddam could be safe? Sergeant Harris was on a roll. In the United States. We could put him in the witness protection program. Give him $1 million so he could live. Good, maybe a little business, that would be funny. Yeah, he could sell pictures of Elvis on black velvet. You really want to get into this war bad, don't you? Marla Kennedy was playing solitaire on the fold-out table. Look, Miss Molly. These people need to learn what's going on. You see what I'm talking about? What they understand over here is power. Sergeant Harris glanced toward Captain Coles to see how his remarks were being taken. They got to see your power. They got to see you take out their cities, kill a few folks. In a way, we're teachers getting ready to let them know what American power is really all about. That's why I'm here. What I think, Jonesy put talcum powder in his boots and shook them, is that Saddam got a tune in his head and he wants to play it real bad. And when it don't go right, he just play it louder. A lot of dudes do that. They call it music, but it could just be war. Jones, what are you talking about? Coles asked. Hey, Captain, why are you over here? Kennedy looked up from her cards. I joined the army when I was 22 and trying to figure out what to do with my life, Captain Coles answered. I kept thinking I was going to make up my mind on some career path and then get out. Haven't quite got around to making up my mind or getting out. I feel good about defending my country, about being in civil affairs. You know, we bring a human face to war. I feel good about that. I couldn't tell if Captain Coles really felt good about it or not. He didn't share much with us. You think we're going in? Evans asked. As you say, Saddam's backed himself into a corner. Captain Coles nodded as he spoke. He understands power. If he backs down now, every gunslinger in the Middle East will be after him. So he might as well stay and fight it out. Stay and get wasted, you mean? Harris did seem anxious. Captain Coles stood up. He looked uncomfortable. I'm going to go speak to Sessions, he said. She was talking about us pulling guard duty, but I think I can talk her out of it. Tell her that Sergeant Harris will take a shift by himself, Kennedy said. They won't need the rest of us. Yo, woman, you got a lot of mouth for a chick, Harris said. Glad you noticed it, Sergeant. Captain Coles left and Sergeant Harris started flipping through the television channels, seeing if any of them came in clearly. I knew the military channel would, but I didn't want to watch another rerun of the latest speech from the White House. I got up and went out into the clear spring air. Before arriving at Doha, I had imagined being on a desert with camels wandering by and palm trees swaying in the wind. It had taken 7 hours to fly from Newark, New Jersey, to Ramstein Air Force Base in Germany, and another 7 to reach Kuwait. The place blew my mind. The whole city of Doha was squeaky clean and beautiful. Almost everything was new or nearly new. I arrived on a Saturday morning and went with a bunch of guys into the city. There was every kind of department store you could think about and the street humped with SUVs. When I saw the Grand Mosque with its golden dome, it took my breath away. One of the guys I was with, a civilian contractor, told me that I would never get used to the architecture in the Arab countries. It changes your whole perspective about the people over here, he said. 9 o'clock this morning we marched to the CENTCOM Theater and saw a film about Saddam Hussein. There were at least 1,000 guys there, most of them 3 RCL infantry dudes and a lot of Marines and Special Ops. Saddam looked like a sweetheart of a guy. Always calm looking, distinguished. In most of the pictures there was no change of expression on his face. In the film he was always seen either shaking hands or shooting a pistol into the air. Then the images changed to the Kurds who were gassed. A woman still had her arm out toward her child. The whole scene looked unreal, as if it had been staged. I wanted to turn away from the bodies lying on the ground. Some looked as if they might move at any moment. Just get up and walk off. I didn't want to see these people lying dead. I tried to get myself mad, but I only managed to feel scared. The thing was that nobody else seemed scared. A lot of guys acted as if they were pissed and were anxious to get the war thing started. A guy from the 3RD infantry, kind of small, with almost a baby face, kept talking about facing the Iraqis. We need to think about winning this thing and checking ourselves out to see if we really want it. You know what I mean? Because if we really want it, we can make it happen, he said. Those people, the Kurds, laying on the ground, they didn't have a chance. We got the chance. We got to do a gut check and see if we got the will to win. I didn't know if I had the same will to win as the guy from the 3RD. What I did know is that I wanted to do my part. The officers let us sit around and talk up the war and I thought that they did it on purpose. It was like being in a locker room before a big game. I seen a 240 take a guy's leg off from 100 yards, a big-headed corporal said. The whole leg came off and the sucker was just laying there on the ground, looking at his leg as he died. I felt a little sick. After the movie we went back to our quarters. We had settled down into card games and the usual BS when we got called out to formation. Captain Coles looked at the 2 officers, a colonel and a lieutenant, who gave us a quick inspection. The colonel had enough gear on to be burning up in the heat. He was making sure he looked tough. I thought about his getting heat rash and smiled but wiped it off my face before he passed by me. You people represent the United States Army, and you represent our country and our way of life as well, the colonel said, sounding like he was making a formal speech. If we go into Iraq, the people there will be watching the combat troops, seeing how well they perform their duties as well as how we treat the local population. but the most lasting impression will be a few soldiers working civil affairs. You can do a great job over here, or you can undo any gains we make by acting without thinking, acting out of fear instead of logic, or acting in a manner that betrays American principles. Years from now, when the people in the cities and villages remember this operation, it will be your faces and actions that they will recall. Colonel Rose ended the talk with a recording of the Star Spangled Banner. It was a little hokey, but standing there at attention with all the other soldiers, I did feel a sense of pride. I think civil affairs is going to be the most interesting thing about this war, Captain Cole said when we returned to our tent. And maybe the safest if I can convince Major Sessions to keep you guys off patrols. I'm passing out the official vehicle assignments. You're responsible for routine maintenance and cleanliness, and you each have to sign for your assigned vehicle. Look over these assignments and memorize them. If we go in, you won't be allowed to take any documents with you except maps and your personal identification. I'm assigning the first three security squads. He handed out the papers and we looked them over. The assignments were the same as he had put on the blackboard earlier. We'll have different leaders depending on what assignment we're on, Captain Cole said. Regardless of the mission and who the leader is, we need to think of ourselves as a team. If we reach a position in which we're not only seeing each other but actually sensing what each member of the team is feeling, there's a good chance we'll all come out of this war in one piece. Any questions? So you want to break it down to us one more time? Danforth asked. We're supposed to go out and kill the Iraqis and blow up their stuff. Then we help them find their arms or legs, or whatever we've blown off, and patch them back together. Then we all sit in a circle and sing campfire songs, right? You might not be taking this seriously, Danforth, but the operations people are and they're going to make it work. What this war is going to be about, and we're still not positive it's going to happen, is regime change and destroying the Iraqis' chemical and any nuclear weapons we find. It's not about making the people suffer, and it's up to us to let them know that. If Saddam does step down and they turn over their weapons, we can avoid a lot of bloodshed. Yeah, okay. Danforth shrugged. It's definitely good on paper. The way Captain Coles laid it out, each squad would have one Humvee, consisting of a driver, a gunner, and two other guys. Marla outranked me, but she wanted to be the gunner. I liked her and I liked Captain Coles. Jonesy was okay too. Coles said he would ride with us most of the time, which was why we only had three in our crew. What we did for the next 3 days was to sit around and wait and talk about whether or not anyone was going to start shooting. Most of what we learned was from the television news. There was a VCR in the day room and we watched a lot of flicks. They had every war movie ever produced, including three copies of Tom Cruise in Top Gun, which I liked. We also watched a lot of training films and spent hours practicing putting on our gas masks. I also noticed that the teams were hanging out more together. Hey, Bertie, you know why the mess hall is so empty this morning? Marla brought her tray over to my table and plunked down across from me. How long you going to call me Bertie? I asked. It's empty because half the hoodlums sneaked out in the middle of the night, she answered. The hoodlums were what we call the special ops guys who went on secret missions in enemy territory. We had asked a few what they did, but they weren't talking. Actually, most of them just grunted. Marla continued, some women from the engineering battalion near the post exchange told me. They got them up around 2 in the morning. They were all blacked up and in every kind of uniform you could mention. What were those women doing up? Had to go pee, Marla said. Did you know women did that? Captain Coles came by with a cup of coffee in each hand. Mind if I join you? No, sir, I said. All signs point to go, he said. If you're going to write any letters home. Marla spotted Danforth and beckoned him over. He came to the table, turned a chair around, and straddled it. Marla heard that the hoodlums left camp last night, I said. They can't be going into Iraq yet. Danforth gestured with his hands as he spoke. There's no official war. They've been going in and out of Iraq for the last 6 months, Cole said. They're setting up scouting operations, making contacts, that sort of thing. How come they didn't get the hoodlums to supply security for civil affairs instead of us? Danforth asked. I mean, some of those special forces guys act like they'd consider it a favor if they killed you. Coles laughed, a big toothy laugh that lit up his whole face. That's probably why the average Iraqi won't talk to them, he said. He put more sugar into his coffee, tasted it, and pushed it aside. You guys look like reasonable people. The army probably thinks you might even try to talk to a villager before you killed him. There's Ahmed. Marla nodded toward the chow line. Where's he from? He's in the American army? Those are desert camouflage units he wears. Cleveland, Captain Cole said. He's a civilian translator. Try not to kill him if you can help it. They frown on that kind of thing in Cleveland. The army wants him to blend in wherever possible. Be a kind of go-between. This be a strange war, Marla said. Where you from, Captain Coles? Danforth asked, Allentown, Pennsylvania. My family's lived there for 3 generations back. Before then we were, or so I've been told, in England. Allentown's a good little place. A couple of hours from anywhere exciting. Some of the best food in the world from nearby farms and some of the Amish folk in the area. Where you from again? Richmond, Danforth said. Right outside of the city, really. What's your hometown? Coles asked Marla. Is this the beginning of a war movie? Marla asked. Everybody tells about themselves so when they get killed we'll all feel sorry for them. She didn't wait for an answer. She stood and just walked away. Definitely cool. The next morning we watched President Bush give a message to the American people that sounded like it was from a cowboy movie. The Humvees came and we received ours with the usual military lecture. This is the finest fighting vehicle in the Army of the United States of America, so don't you meatheads go fing it up. Second Squad, Harris, Darcy, and Evans, painted a name on their Humvee, calling it DEFCON 2. I was still a little mad at Marla for always calling me Bertie, so I suggested we call her Humvee Miss Molly, which was what Sergeant Harris called her. Yeah, that works, Marla said. From, Perry, Robin, date, March 17, 2003, to, Perry, Richard, subject, various, hey Uncle Richie, just got online for the first time over here. They have a list of about 100 rules about email. We can't say this, we can't say that. All about security. But there are 590 reporters, give or take a 100 or so, asking us questions and reporting everything we're not supposed to be seeing. No real problem because we don't know anything. I wrote Dad a good letter. Anyway, I thought it was okay. Did you know he doesn't like the internet? He says it will mature in another 20 years. The infantry and the Marines are the stars over here. The camera crews follow the guys with the most equipment. Oh, this is not important, but I thought you might find it interesting. They have floors in the tents that look like the kind of floors at basketball games, the kind you assemble. We can't put water on them because when the guys come in with sand on their boots it really messes them up. So we don't have to wash them down. Small blessings. Last thing. The guys from the Arabic television station, Al Jazeera, all look like they could have come from Harlem. Dark-skinned, etc. If you talk to your brother, also known as Dad, you might tell him that I was waiting for a letter from him.